Hi, I'm Jenny, the host of It's Murder Up North. Before we get to the episode, please be advised that this episode does have content that some may find distressing, particularly the mention of stillbirth and the death of a child. Hello, I'm Jenny, and welcome to It's Murder Up North. Thank you for joining me as I reflect on crimes that occur in the north of England, from the infamous to the obscure. Please help by liking, subscribing, sharing, and leaving reviews. I also welcome any case suggestions. First of all, I want to thank my followers on the It's Murder Up North Facebook page, Twitter, and on the YouTube channel. Your support is hugely appreciated, and I look forward to welcoming new members. For this episode, I will look at the case of James Bulger, 2-year-old who was kidnapped and murdered in Merseyside. His story resonates with me. My little brother was born 3 weeks before James. When I was 5, I have a vivid memory of the first time I saw fear in my mum's face. She frantically searched the crowded shopping centre for my 2-year-old brother. We'd been rushing to catch a bus to the hospital where my dad was being treated for gallstones, when amongst the hurrying crowds I was knocked to the floor. My mum let go of my brother's hand to comfort me, and in that split second he was gone. The look on my mum's face still haunts me. My mum is partially sighted, and this was the first time she had ventured out alone with her 4 children. I recall her trying to stay calm as she began calling my brother's name. I vaguely remember a tall, brown-haired man dressed in black approach us. He talked into a radio, and then the speakers in the centre crackled to life as a lady's voice advised people to be on the lookout for a 2-year-old boy. He had brown hair and was wearing a blue and yellow tracksuit. It was his favourite outfit. I cannot remember how long my brother was gone for, but the man in the black suit led us through the busy centre and stopped outside a shop. "Is that your son?" he said as he pointed in the shop window. There, sat in the window of a toy shop, was my little brother, happily playing, completely oblivious to the fuss he had caused. We look back on it now and laugh, but at the time my mum was terrified, and only years later did I understand why. This happened in 1993, only a couple of months after the horrific murder of James Bulger. It is every parent's worst nightmare. Now I have children of my own, I finally understand that look of terror on my mum's face, which was magnified by the tragic case of James Bulger. To this day, I hate taking my children to the shopping centre. During my research on this case, I decided to listen to Denise Fergus' book. She is the mother of James. The book is called I Let Him Go, which is a heartbreaking account of her life before, during and after losing her son. Proceeds of the book go towards the James Bulger Memorial Trust, which is established on his 21st birthday. For more information regarding the charity, please visit www.forjames.org. I will also provide a link in the episode description. In the book, Denise highlighted that James is remembered as a little boy who was murdered, or his death is overshadowed by the boys who took his life. And that is why I have chosen to do 2 separate episodes. In this episode, I will focus on James, his life, his family, and their experiences during the early days from James's disappearance up to when he was found. The second episode will be on the killers, their trial, and the aftermath of this murder that shocked the world. During my research, I learned that James's family experienced more heartbreak in the space of 4 years than some people experience in a lifetime. We'll start in the happy times when Denise met James's dad, Ralph, in Liverpool while on a night out with her sister and some friends. The couple quickly fell in love, and Denise at 18 was swept up in the excitement of her first serious relationship, imagining what her future would be with a house and a family of her own. They started their life together in a small bedsit, and within 2 years the couple were expecting their first child. Filled with all the excitement of expectant parents, they prepared for their child's arrival. Denise went into labour at 38 weeks, on the 22nd of February 1989. She was rushed to hospital to give birth. After being connected to the monitors, she was given the devastating news that it was possible the baby would be stillborn. Only after delivering the child were the doctor's fears confirmed. The baby, who the couple called Kirsty, had not survived. Grief-stricken following their loss, Denise and Ralph struggled to come to terms with losing their daughter. And for the next few months, every day was an ongoing battle, filled with silent memories rather than the sound of their baby, Kirsty. Denise came from a large family, and their strength helped her through what she thought would be the darkest moment of her life. 4 months after this devastating loss, Paul discovered they were expecting again. The 9 months were filled with anxiety. Denise had regular scans to check on the baby's well-being, and she refused to have anything for the baby in the house until the child was born. The loss of Kirsty made her resolute to protect this child. She was determined that when he or she was born, she would keep her baby close, as Kirsty made her acutely aware how precious life is. On the 16th of March 1990, after 37 hours in labour, Denise and Ralph welcomed James Patrick Bulger, a beautiful blue-eyed boy. In the first 4 months of James's life, he suffered from severe colic, which caused him to be very unsettled. Denise would spend hours, day and night, soothing her son, wishing she could ease his pain as he cried for hours on end. After James's death, Denise reflected on all the late nights, cuddles, and the time she and James spent alone. Denise stated, and I quote, "I wondered if the universe had given us the chance to cram in as much time as possible before he was taken from me." When the colic passed, James's personality began to shine through. He was a sweet and happy little boy, and when he learned to walk, he showed what a little live wire he was. Denise savoured every moment, fondly recalling every milestone. As Denise came from a large family, he always had cousins to play with and aunties and uncles to shower him with affection. Denise kept her promise and kept James close. He went everywhere with her, and the two had an amazing bond. On the 16th of December, James and Denise spent the day at her parents'. James played on the floor with his toy cars and his grandfather until evening set in and they headed home. The following morning, Denise learned that her dad had been taken to hospital during the night and was being treated for angina. Denise went out to get some supplies for her dad's hospital stay and planned to visit him that afternoon. When she returned home, she was told that her father had passed away. It was so unexpected and sudden. That morning, her dad enjoyed a full English breakfast while in the hospital and was in good spirits. But an hour later, he had died. As with the death of Kirsty, the close-knit family pulled together to support each other. James helped lift the family's spirits with his happy disposition. Shortly after her father's death, James celebrated his first birthday. His birthday party was, in Denise's words, loud, chaotic and messy. Just what a child's birthday party should be. His mother laments that James is immortalised for the way he died. She wants people to remember that he was real. Fizzing with life, James lit up a room. He was never grumpy, there were no tantrums, and he wasn't naughty. He was a cheeky little ray of sunshine. He was a kind child who was willing to share his toys, and he was able to get into mischief too. During a visit to his grandmother's, his curiosity got the better of him as he reached up to a shelf full of precious trinkets. Unfortunately, he pulled the shelf off the wall and every ornament smashed. James's reaction was to laugh. What I can imagine was probably a look similar to the one my little girl does when she's done something she shouldn't have. That mix of surprise, sadness, and possibly a little puppy dog eyes just to make your heart melt. James loved to dance, especially to the music of Michael Jackson. He also loved watching the Smurfs, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Thomas the Tank Engine. On the cold winter morning of Friday the 12th of February 1993, it was a typical day in the Bulger household. James woke up full of his usual liveliness. The two-year-old sat at his little table, watching cartoons, eating his favourite cereal, Frosties, from his favourite football pattern ball. Ralph was going to be building some furniture with Denise's brother. And although initially Denise wanted Ralph to take James with him, the toddler was a curious boy, and there would be heavy items and dangerous tools. So James would spend the day with Denise to keep him safe. Denise dressed James in a silvery grey tracksuit with a white stripe going down the side, little white socks, and his tiny white trainers with a black inlay and white laces. As it was cold, Denise put James in a hooded, padded blue jacket before they headed out of the house and made their way to Denise's mum's home. About lunchtime, Denise and James agreed to an impromptu trip to the Strand shopping centre in Bootle. They were joined by Nicola, who was engaged to Denise's brother Paul, and James's cousin Vanessa. Nicola had a small car, and as they didn't plan to be gone long, Denise decided to leave James's pushchair behind. It would be the first time she'd go anywhere without James being in his pushchair. The Strand shopping centre was busy when they arrived. Denise held tightly onto James's hand and kept him close. The group visited a number of shops before heading to a butcher's shop to buy some pork chops for tea. At the counter, Denise let go of James's little hand to get money from her purse. A split second, that's all it took. When his mum turned round, James was gone, and the never-ending nightmare for his family began. Realising her son wasn't in the shop, Denise rushed out into the shopping centre, looking frantically for her little brown-haired boy. But she couldn't see him. Denise turned left and headed down the shopping centre concourse. Tragically, and unbeknownst to her at the time, her son had gone right. The panicked mother headed to the information centre to see if someone had taken him there. Just 5 minutes had passed, her baby couldn't have gone far. And as the information desk made an announcement over the tannoy, the search for James began. Denise went from shop to shop, person to person, in the hope that someone had seen her baby. As the minutes passed, her fear grew. Where was her son? In one shop, an assistant advised Denise that her boy had been found in a shop on the second floor, but this would be the first of many well-meaning but false leads. After traversing the entire shopping centre, its 110 stores and 5 entrances and a large car park, the terrified mother still couldn't find her child. She grew increasingly desperate, just hoping he would appear from under a clothes rail, shaken but safe, just wanting a cuddle from his mummy. 40 minutes after James had disappeared, the police were informed it was 4:20 and it was getting dark outside and the air was growing increasingly cold. The first officer on the scene already had concerns. It was a rare situation for a child as young as James to go missing for such a length of time, and usually it was because some ill had befallen them. At 5:30, the centre grew quiet. Shop lights began to be switched off as they were locked up for the night, and the search for James continued. Denise was taken to the police station, and as in normal procedure, the police began their investigation by looking at those closest to James. It is hard to imagine how you would feel being questioned, feeling that every word is being scrutinised, and that you've been suspected of doing something to your child, especially when all you want is to hold your baby and know that they're safe. As news of James's disappearance began to spread, so did the rumours. Denise was accused of being at the shopping centre to steal. It was also speculated that she had left James outside the butcher's shop. These hurtful accusations were proved false by CCTV footage. It was CCTV that gave police the first clue. They found footage of James leaving the butcher's shop at 3:39 p.m. A minute later, Denise is captured leaving the shop, looking for him. As the night drew on and more people joined in the search, hopeful that James had just wandered off or gotten lost, the police continued to look through the footage. There was hours of it, but more footage was uncovered, at this time showing James on the upper floor of the shopping centre, just after 3:40 p.m. He seemed to be following two boys. The now infamous shot of James holding hands with the boys is timestamped at 3:42 p.m. And the next footage found a minute later showed the boys leading James out of the exit of the shopping centre towards the canal. It took 4 minutes, 240 seconds for James to be taken away from the shopping centre. This awful revelation must have haunted the police and the family. The first few hours after James had gone missing, the search had focused on the shopping centre and precious time had been lost. At the time, the now infamous and haunting images of James in his trusting manner following the boys made the police and the family feel hopeful. No one could imagine that these boys would harm James. On the Saturday, a press conference was conducted, and Denise addressed the reporters. She pleaded, "If anyone had got at my baby, please bring him back. I have two girls. My youngest is two, and I cannot imagine what James's family must have been going through as another day passed without news of their son's whereabouts." Back at her mum's house, although exhausted, Denise sat by the phone. Every time it rang, her heart raced. Sometimes it was friends or family calling to offer support, but one call stood out. Denise answered the phone, and a calm, reassuring voice told her, "He's safe. We've got him, Denise. We've got your little boy." Despite Denise pleading with the caller for more information, they just repeated the line, "We've got your little boy." The call was deemed to be a sick and heartless prank. However, the caller was never traced. A witness came forward to say that she had seen James and the two boys at about 4:30 p.m. on the Friday he was taken. They were making their way along the canal towpath. The witness questioned the two older boys and they explained that they had just found James. 2 days after James' abduction, Denise was taken out by police to assist in the search. She sat in an officer's car as they drove around the streets. During the drive, the police officer received a call on the radio and advised Denise that they needed to return to the station immediately. At the time, James's mother was unaware of the full conversation between the officers, but she later learned that the officer was advised to switch off her radio and not discuss anything until they got back to the station. Denise was shown to a quiet room at the police station, where she was given the tragic news that they had found James, but he was deceased. The lead investigator in the case, Albert Kirkby, had personally been to identify the body. After the post-mortem, the family were given the heartbreaking details of how James had died. Many details were already in the hands of the press, and the police wanted to give the family the information firsthand. James had been murdered. From that moment on, Denise would be haunted by the decision she made that day. Why didn't she insist Ralph took James? What if she hadn't agreed to go shopping? She second-guessed her decision to leave the pram at home and her choice to turn left instead of right. Her biggest regret was that she let go of James's hand. All of this is the guilt of a mother whose child was taken in circumstances beyond her control. She did everything she could to keep her boy safe. As a parent, we have all let go of our children's hands to deal with something else. From my mum helping me up when I fell, to Denise just getting money out of her purse. No one could have foreseen what would happen to James on that ordinary day back in February 1993, and what might happen next is beyond anyone's darkest fears.
Thank you so much for listening to my first episode. I couldn't have brought James's story to you without his mother's book, I Let Him Go. As I stated earlier, proceeds from the book go to James Bulger's Memorial Trust. The second episode will explore the perpetrators and why this case shocked the world. If you want to be a part of the Murder Up North family, you are more than welcome. Please join us on the It's Murder Up North Facebook page. You can contact me on Twitter on It's Murder Up North at Jenny Senior 4. That's Jenny, SENIORI and the number 4. And I have a YouTube channel called It's Murder Up North where there are already videos ready to view. Please help me grow It's Murder Up North by liking, sharing and subscribing. Send me a message and let me know what you think. And if there is a case you would like me to cover, I am open to suggestions. Episode 2 will be coming soon. But until then, keep an eye on those shadows. Bye!